We'll see. So here are my collaborators. Joseph Collar is getting his PhD next month from Rice. Doug Lin and Bert Windroff also at the lab, and Edison Liang at Rice. Now, none of my collaborators has seen this talk, so if there's errors, then that's purely my fault. And so Doug, you can also ask questions.
They will in about half an hour.
Okay. So I think several previous speakers have missed the morning talks. I apologize for that. I just got in over lunchtime. Have given an overview for the migration problem. I assume everybody here are quite familiar with that. So I mostly concentrate on one aspect, which is the potential vorticity evolution of the disk that's in interaction with the planet, and especially the possibility of secondary instability and its impact. Now, for those who might not be very familiar with this quantity, you take the curl of the velocity and divide it by the, in 2D, divided by surface density, you get the, sometimes also called vorticity. The equation for that actually is conserved. I mean, along the streamlines, you get these two terms as source terms. One is what we usually call the stretching term, but it's the gradient along the z-direction, then the baroclinic term. When the pressure contours and the surface density contour are not aligned, you can drive it baroclinically. In the barotropic runs, like isothermal runs, which are typical for most of the runs we've seen, this term is gone. Now, in 2D, this term is also gone. So along streamlines, this quantity is conserved. Okay, now, of course, we know it's always broken. There are several, many aspects that, effects that could break the potential vorticity. So I'll list the three here. One is obviously viscosity. Like any viscous flows will tend to destroy conservation in many ways. Then shocks can do that too. Thank you. I haven't done it, and you're already celebrating. I say, okay. Okay, the third effect is non-adiabatic forcing, which I'll in a very short time will define what that means. Now, a lot of the disk simulation runs we've seen, many groups used an explicit viscosity. So in their simulations, they actually expect that vorticity is not conserved. And even for inviscid flows simulations, there is still numerical viscosity that could bring in dissipation. The spiral shocks, which is the main focus of my talk, as you will see, is very efficient at changing potential vorticity. And I'll come to the third point very quickly. So compared to all the previous speakers, I'm still back in the dark ages, because I'm presenting several very simple setups, okay? The planet, most notably, the planet is on fixed orbit. It's a circular, you know, zero eccentricity, and it's small, it's 10 to minus four, so it's sort of in the limit and not quickly developing a gap, although the density dips are produced. It's gradually turned on over some finite period of time. There are isothermal disks, some disk size. There are mostly two types of simulations. One is that the surface density is a constant, so the vorticity, which I call is zeta there, goes. Sorry, that should be minus three halves. Okay, so it's just omega. Then the second type is that the surface density actually were chosen with a parallel, so that with precise parallel, so that the initial vorticity is actually a flat constant. Okay, so this is using 2D, and this is a numerical issues that I'll be happy to talk about. Actually, before we actually did all our simulations, there's a very nice paper by Bamforce and Kuransky. Okay. So what they've shown actually is it's not a direct nonlinear numerical simulation. What they did is a bit similar to the linearized set of equations, but they specifically treated the co-rotational region, the area what Pavel just talked about. and they use this asymptotic matching, which is really exploit the smallness of the planet mass, so the match is the leading terms. But at a co-rotational resonance, it has a singularity, so they have to do the internal solution matches to the external solution. The numerical details, I would recommend everybody to go there and actually read that paper. So I just grabbed this is from monthly notices. For some reason, they don't give out color figures, so all I get is black and white. So what they showed, this is radius, this is 0 to 2 pi. I think radius is increasing that way, so the star is down here. And this is the vortensity plot. So there is so they use the constant density case. So the vortensity has an r to the minus 3/2. So it's decreasing that way. So it's in the co-orbital co-rotational region. The sort of evolution separates into three stages. There is some kind of mixing going on between the small ones and big ones. Then they saw secondary instabilities leading to vortex formation. Then it transitions into a mixed up state that's more like a turbulent state. The overall evolution flattens this is the initial profile, then flattens the vortensity profile inside this plus minus 2, 1 point something co-rotational region. So we did a very similar thing, but using fully numerical, nonlinear direct numerical simulation with similar resolution, actually. So I will show the potential vorticity plot here. Now, so you're going to see this type of plot many times. So this is radius. This is where the planet radius would be. This is in units of Roche lobe. So the star is down there, the 0 to 2 pi, and that's the color bar for the. So initially, you have r to the minus 3/2 decreasing going that way. So you sort of again see this very quick evolution, but essentially very similar to what Bornfors et al. Were using the other method getting it, that you see this region where you have the mixing of the vortensity as well as the secondary instability generation for vortices. Now, there are other key differences, as I will emphasize, as you can see there, and actually it's buried in the color bar here. There are large vortensity changes. Can you guys actually see this? So this is meant to show that this is as mutually averaged vortensity versus radius. This is the plus minus 1 point something region, one region for the mixing and flattening due to that secondary instability. And those two actually are due to the spiral shocks, which I will mostly talk about. Okay, there is not one non-idealness involved in this process, which is shown here. Without the planet, you actually have streamlines are not intersecting each other. Okay. By the time you actually switch on the planet mass, you automatically join the flow lines, especially in this region, which is in the horseshoe region. Okay, so that because you initially had a gradient in the vortensity, so values here are higher than there, but now you're forcing them to be on the same flow line. That necessarily leads to mixing. So that's one non-ideal process. That this is no matter how slow you turn on the planet mass, this is bound to happen, has to mix up the vortensity values. Now, so now I'm going to talk about runs where the initial vortensity is actually constant. This is this what you've probably seen many times in the co-rotational frame, planets there, stars there. This is a density multiplied by this, taken out the background slope.
Probably said, but how big is the planet and how big is the disk? A mass.
The planet's 10 to the minus 4.
Oh, okay.
So, okay. So you see the two density channels. That's minimum. That's two dips. This is the planet. This is the two spiral shocks. This is about 50 orbits.
So rho really should be
Should be sigma, yes. Yeah, sorry. I think I had a role throughout, so apologize for that. So you monitor the torque on the planet. So you sort of get into this classical type 1 situation where you actually see this libration period. This is for this mass is about 40 orbits. It's actually quite easy to understand that because as everyone is familiar with this, let me go to the next slide. So we actually also wrote our own restricted three-body codes just to track out those trajectories. So this is L1, L2, L3, L4, L5. If you plate test particles along that line, this is the distance to the L4 point. You can see those guys have 40 orbits, libration period. They are the ones come most close to the planet, so they give the strongest torque to the planet that dominate the period which is seen there. Remember, this density has a slope, so as the matter goes around, that's causing this variation. Goes around in the horseshoe orbit. Okay. Now, what's really we were surprised because initially we did all this just to test our codes basically, and then we saw this. Okay. Those are real data. It looks like just some noise added on it, but it's real data. Now, what happened? So, I'm going to show a potential vorticity movie again. This is R, this is phi. Let me first show it then. So, the initially is 0.5, which is the constant that you should get, okay. So there's about 100 orbits involved in this. Okay, let me run it and then stop for a while. Okay, so there are several regions, okay, you can see several features develop. First of all, it's deviating from the initial mean value. And there are regions that's increasing. The regions are decreasing. Then the region sort of, so plus minus one is in this horseshoe region. I believe this is mostly coming from numerical noise. Fortunately, it's not growing. It has a small finite value that stays there, okay. But those guys are actually growing, as you can see. They grow to a point where it gets bluer. Bluer means getting smaller, less than 0.5, and bigger than 0.5. Then eventually something else happens. Now this is vorticity. So you match this up to your torque history. What you realize is that when the flow transitions of producing those guys is also where you're getting the large variations in the torque amplitude, which eventually be really what made all this was that those are what we call anticyclones in vorticity is also higher density regions as those densities every time they come by the planet really gave the kick that's causing the magnitudes of the torque really varies by a large amount. I will skip the density movie. So if you do the azimuthal average of vorticity, okay, this is radius, this is psi, and this is the initial value. As the system evolve, eventually this region, that region become unstable. That's the blue region, that's the red region, there's a further blue region out. We've done this for many different parameters, and this is just showing the change of vorticity as a function of time for different turnaround time of the planet mass. Because one of the initial suggestions Doug made was maybe we are switching on the planet too quickly, that's too long adiabatic, it's causing a lot of changes to the conservation of vorticity. And we went all the way out to 700, and we still see basically this guy just waits for you to turn it on and then do its own thing. So, okay, how to look at this plot. This is the change as a function of time. So it takes 100 orbits to turn the planet on fully, then they linearly grow, then saturates. This is after saturation, 200, 3, 4, 5, 700 orbits. So the fact this is also linear in time says the every time this growth is actually just adding it up as a function of time. Does that make sense? The change in the vorticity just adding up linearly in time. Okay, and we've done a different planet masses. It goes like mu squared. So I will spend most of time talk about what's actually causing the changes. Can we understand the origin of those changes? So I'm going to separate this plot into three regions. There's one that's the deep blue region where it went unstable, vortices came out. There's a very red region which shows the vorticity increase. Then go further out, the vorticity actually decrease. We've done this for many sun speeds. We also went all the way to point one, I think. So you take this blue, for example, you're going to have this one region 1, 2, and 3, 1, 2, and 3, 1, 2, and 3. Okay. So this is, we're trying to be sure that's not a numerical artifact. So I'll skip this one. In region 2 and 3, let me actually still run this so that I'll just be sure. Oops. So just to be sure, this is what I call region 2 and 3. 2 is this big increase, this 3 is the decrease further out, not where the vortex coming out. Okay. That's where region 1. So one can actually analytically derive, given the shock wave, we have non-uniform density in the pre-shock region, what is the vorticity jump through the shock? Okay, and that's a study actually went all the way back to all the famous fluid dynamicists. I found a very simple expression from that guy's paper. He expresses the vorticity now change really coming from three terms. One is the curvature of the shock front. Okay, also has a density gradient along the shock front. Then there is a baroclinic driving. That's easily understandable that when the pressure and density are not conserved, not aligned, they will. Then there is also angular momentum term. So this is the density compression ratio minus 1. That's just in the shock frame, the perpendicular Mach number, and the gradient along the shock surface. Okay. Now, for the isothermal shock, you throw away the middle term. When you actually express in terms of potential vorticity, which he didn't do, but that's easy to do, just take that expression, you end up with only one term. Actually, that term cancels out. That, which I call a density factor and a curvature factor. The density factor just, you can measure from the shock, from your simulation. Then the curvature, this is really what drives it. You look at this and say, there's only one thing that can change sign, okay, because this is always positive. Is when the perpendicular Mach number, as you go along the curved shock front, is either decreasing or increasing. That changes the sign. Okay, this is the first point I want to make, that since we observe pluses and minuses in the average potential vorticity profile, does this follow the expectation? So this is just to give a zoom up, zooming view of what's actually happening. So this is X and Y, okay, not R and Phi anymore. This artificially putting the planet there. This is density, by the way, and you have flow lines coming in. This is the shock, spiral shock. The star is that way. You take your peek and see where the shock starts. But basically, you go in and measure the density jumps. You mark out the shock surface. But this is a contour of VR equals zero. Turns out VR equals zero matches the shock interface quite nicely up until this region, and then it's not matching anymore. But that's where also shock disappears. So you can go in and measure the densities and the fluxes. So this is, for example, this one way plotting a perpendicular Mach number as function of radius. you know, initially it's subsonic, and then you hit the sonic point. And then this curve sort of, as you go further away from the planet. We did this for many sound speeds. You indeed actually find that the perpendicular Mach number as you march along the curved shock surface actually has an increasing phase. I can't reach that. And then the decreasing phase. And that immediately, those black dots I put it by hand, sort of just eyeballing by eye, is where you would expect the vorticity goes, the change of vorticity goes to pluses to minuses or minuses to pluses. Okay. And so you can go in and actually measure this curve. Those, just trust me on that, that those black locations are quite close to the where the Mach number as a function of curvature, the slope changes sign. So how about amplitude? So you again, you have everything. You measure the density jumps, you measure the curvature slopes. You do actually get the basic shape right. That you have the switch point, then you have a region that's negative, a region that's positive. The exact amplitude is not quite matching yet. We're still doing more work on this. Now, what I've talked about, this expression here, is mostly for region 2 and 3, because I've dropped a number of terms. I can, for anyone who is interested, okay, I can go over some of the mathematics with you privately of how to derive this jump. But essentially, it comes down to taking the tangential component of the momentum equation and then take the tangential derivative of the shock jump condition and match the two. And so for region 2 and 3, I've mostly ignored the external force term, which is really coming from the planet. For region 1, which is, I was trying to find the sad face, but I couldn't. So this is still happy face. We couldn't get it to fit, okay, so. there are several complications. One is that, you know, I'm not even sure this analytically derived expression applies when the shock actually goes away, okay. Second is that, especially at this region, the external force is strongest. That has to be put it into the momentum equation, because in a linearly capillary flow, you break the rotational velocity. You really are introducing a large radial velocity force in along the shock front. So the basic message is that if you look at region 2 and 3, we actually can get quasi-analytic fitting to the numerical results we get. If you look at region 1. Which is also the most intriguing region, we're not quite getting it in terms of analytic theory. So the only thing left is really do a lot of numerical simulation using different schemes. We've done that, and it's always there. Now, my plea to the community would be, I'll give you the same initial configuration. Please do it yourself to find out whether in that region you indeed see similar growth rate of the vorticity, which eventually leads to the secondary instability. Okay, so the basic message is that in this very simple problem, because of the shocks, okay, the flows, that vorticity is not conserved, that typically leads to the development of inflection points in the radial profile. And that inflection point actually grows because the flow keep coming back, goes through the shock. And as those inflection grows, they develop dips and bumps, gaps in the vorticity profile that eventually become unstable to secondary instabilities. One of the well-known examples of Poppleloisel-Pringle instability can be coached that way, that it's the potential vorticity profile contains the inflection points that made this flow unstable. I've done similar problems for vortex, Rossby vortex in disks, which I think I'm running out of time, so I will skip those. In the last 2 minutes, I want to just say something about multi-planets. So we did a simulation with two planets. Again, they're on fixed orbits. One is here. This is vorticity, so you can't see anything. So one planet is here. Another planet is 10 Roche-Lobos radius away. Both are 10 to minus 4 masses sounds to be 0.04. There, we've varied those parameters. So let me show that. So I run out of disk space, so each frame is 10 turns. Okay, so you really see the other planet zipping by very fast. The message I'm trying to get across, though, is that you get this typical region where, due to the two spiral shocks, you get the increase, the inside the decrease. And then this region also sees the shocks from the other planet. So that also causes changes, vice versa. And then in between, this region is also destabilized by the two shocks, actually four shocks driving through it. So the basic message is that actually there are, if you just study the flow around it, actually there are many more possibilities now for secondary instability to be excited. And all those vortices actually are high density blobs that will induce strong torques on the planet, which I hope has implications for migration eccentricity driving. So this is a brief summary that if you run low viscosity runs and tune your numerical schemes to make sure the vorticity is well conserved in idealized flow, and we put in a planet that generates shocks, that develops inflection points in your vorticity profile, leads to secondary instability. And the next phase will be putting in migrating planets and see if some of the things previous speakers spoke about will be present. Thanks.
Where am I here?
Thank you very much. Are there questions, comments? Were all these simulations isothermal?
Yes. We've done adiabatic ones. We see similar things. The key thing is the shocks.
I'm a little confused. I thought that the spiral density waves don't shock until you're a scale height away from the planet at the supersonic transition.
Yeah, so the distance where the shock starts, that's actually what we, I guess I forgot to mention, is, maybe you can look at this one. So it's actually where the ratio of sound speed over Rauschlob radius. Mm-hmm. So that's where you start to see things. Okay, this is planet, this is star is that way. This is spiral shock going down. The flow is going that way and coming back down.
How much viscosity would you require for this effect to disappear? Have you done any work at all putting in a Navier-Stokes type viscosity to see
under what conditions? Ourselves, we didn't. I was just chatting with Willie, and are you willing to quote a number?
We did also some experiments there, also Gavin, a student this year, and definitely with viscosity 10 minus 5, it's gone. So it's somewhere in between 0 and 10 minus 5. It's alpha
centauri 2.
Alpha
or
thanks to
the
mass.
No, I agree.
Okay.
And
this is actually a related question. You put the planet in and then you generate this vortensity profile and you generate the vortices. Have you ever done the experiment of then turning the planet back off and watching the evolution of the vortices, just see whether they wind down or whether they persist for many orbits?
We haven't done that, but I would venture saying if you take away the shocks, whatever properties you've left with should be there. We've done very detailed checks on numerics to make sure that's happening. So if you turn off the planet, shocks go weaker, you lose the driving, but the profile you've created, this bumpy thing, should remain. Yeah. That would be my guess. We can try it.
Your movie stopped just when the vortices had the nicest shape. So how long did you run your models afterwards?
Okay, so
what is the long-term outcome of this?
The long-term outcome, the vortices actually merging. So I can run off disk space, so cut off there. I can well, I may have a figure I can show you later. What happens is that the vortices move around the separatrix not at the same speed, so they actually merge. So you end up with one or two giant ones. So then the torques really, it's like binary collisions with the planet. Okay, so there may be actually seeds for multi-planet systems.